리 얇은 눈물 울바 자의 콘저리 아울리 미쳤나 빨라봐
Victoria, also Teta, Sutta Sri Shimad, His Divine Grace, Abhaya Chanana, the Bhaktivananda Goswami, Srila Prabhupada Kijai, ISKCON Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Kijai, Anantakoti, Voishna, Vrin Kijai, Namacharya, Srila Hridas Thakur Kijai, Prem Se, Kaho Sri Krishna, Chaitanya, Prabhu Nichananda, Shidwaita Gadadha. Shiva Siddhigo Bhaktivinda Gijai, Shishi Radhakrishna Gopikopanath Shai Mukunda Radhakunda Giddigovran Kijai, Vrindavanam Kijai, Maturam Kijai, Jagatasami Kijai, Yamunamai Kijai, Srimati Dalasi Devi Kijai, Samveda Bhakta Vrinda Gijai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Pristaya Bhutale, Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamani, Namaste Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pacharani, Nivashesha Shunyavadi, Paschacha Deja Tarani. Okay, so we're going to start right away. As I mentioned, I have to end this class on the half hour because I have to go to a program tonight, and the program is a half hour away. Okay. So, Om Gana Timidanda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshurun Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigurve Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual masters, Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So we're continuing with our study of the Shriya Upanishad. We're on the first verse, because the first verse is the invocation, which is Om Purnam Purnam Idam. And the second verse is Isha Vashnam Idam Sarvam Nyakam Cha Jikajam Jagat Tena Jikdena Bunjada Makrata Kasasvidana, which is basically, everything is owned and controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he gives everyone a quota, and that quota is supposed to be used in his service. So we're in the middle of the purport, Srila Prabhupada's purport of this particular verse. And so we're going to continue with the purport with my explanations. And, excuse me, And then, as I said before, we're going to have to end on the half hour so I can get to this program tonight. So, let's go. Let's share the screen. Hold on a second. Share the screen. Okay. Here we go. Give me 1 second to get set up. Since the Lord is Purnam, all perfect. All perfect and actually perfectly complete too. There's no possibility of his being subjected to the laws of material nature which he controls. He makes up all the rules. The rules of time, rules of cause and effect, the rules of physics, the rules of mathematics, and he can change any of them he wants. However, both the living entities and inanimate objects are controlled by the laws of nature, and ultimately by the Lord's potency. And of course, Krishna is the one who wrote the laws of nature. This Isopanishad is part of the Yajurveda, and consequently, it contains information concerning the proprietorship of all things existing within the universe. The Lord's proprietorship over everything within the universe is confirmed in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, 7:4-5, where para and para prakriti are discussed. The elements of nature, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego, all belong to the Lord's inferior energy, apara prakriti, whereas the living entity, the living being, the organic energy is his superior energy, para prakriti. Both of these, prakriti of course means energy, both of these prakritis or energies are emanations from the Lord, or created by the Lord, and ultimately he is the control of everything that exists. There's nothing in the universe that does not belong to either the para or the apara prakriti. Therefore, everything is the property of the Supreme Being. So, we should be very clear, both the para prakriti and the apara prakriti are eternal. They weren't created at a certain point, and they're not destroyed at a certain point, but they change in their manifestation. They can undergo some, at least the apara prakriti, the material energy, not the para prakriti, the superior energy, which is ourselves, we don't become to transform. The soul doesn't get transformed. We are Brahman. We are not the supreme Brahman, but we are Brahman. But the apara prakriti can be transformed. Sometimes it's manifest, sometimes it's not manifest, but it's always existing. Because the supreme being, what I mean, it's always existing. It's existing in a potential state, which is called the pradana, the unmanifested stage of the three modes of material nature. And when it's existing in the manifest stage, it's called the universe, or all the universes. Because the Supreme Being, the Absolute Personality of Godhead, is the complete person, he has complete and perfect intelligence to adjust everything by means of his different potencies. The Supreme Being is often compared to a fire, and everything inorganic or organic is compared to the heat and light of that fire. Just as fire distributes energy in the form of heat and life, the Lord displays his energy in different ways. He thus remains the ultimate controller, sustainer, and dictator of everything. In other words, he can manipulate his energies any way he wants. Just like, Prabhupada gives the example, just like an electrician can turn electricity, or someone who designs air conditioner, can turn the electricity into heating or cooling. He can transform it. So in the same way, Prabhupada actually said, and the Vedas say, that Krishna can take this material energy and change it to spiritual energy. I was just reading, in, yes, the Srimad Bhagavatam, that when the Pandavas left this world after all the pastimes were gone or finished, they were able to enter into the spiritual world in the self-same bodies by having the bodies transformed. And you see this in certain exceptional cases, not that it's going to happen in every one of our cases, certainly not in my case. We will give up our body and take another body. But in the case of Gopa Kumara, for example, in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, he was in this material world. He wasn't completely Krishna conscious. He was living in Vrindavan, and he had a body made of earth, water, fire, air, ether, you know, mind, intelligence, false ego. And when it came time for him to enter into the spiritual realm, even Vaikuntha, or even the higher regions of the universe, his body gradually became transformed by the energy of the Supreme Personality of God into pure spiritual an entity, Satchidananda. Right now, this body is asat, that means temporary, achit, ignorant, and nirananda, which means misery. So anyway, so sometimes that can be done. Krishna can do that. And certainly Krishna does that with the deities. And certainly Krishna does that with vibration. Just like the Vedic vibrations, and particularly the vibration of the holy name that is vibrated by our tongue and lips under the direction of the pure devotee. When we've heard it from the pure devotee, even though the tongue, the lips, the air passing through the body may be material, it becomes transformed into something spiritual. Namachintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. Krishna can do that. When we work according to the direction of a pure devotee, another statement in the Bhagavad Gita was that Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir Brahmagno Brahmano Uttam Brahmatena Gantavyam Brahmakarma Samadhanam. When you actually dedicate something fully to Brahman or spiritual activities or the Supreme Personality of God, and that thing becomes transformed, and the person dedicating it becomes transformed, and the result of the activity becomes transformed, and the activity itself becomes transformed in the fire of Brahman. Or just like another example is the ghee thrown into the sacred fire. The ghee is material beforehand, thrown into the sacred fire, becomes transformed, attains a spiritual quality. But you should not be thinking that your body is now a spiritual body. It's not. It's material. It's composed of earth, water, fire, air, ether, and subtle body, mind, intelligence, and false ego. And in your case, in my case, most likely will not become transformed. It'll become spiritualized. In the same way, let me give the example Prabhupada gives, in the same way that an iron rod put in the fire can become and act like fire, but it's not going to become your Satchidananda body that you live with eternally. I wouldn't want to live with my body eternally. That would be a disaster. He is the possessor of all potencies, the knower of everything, and the benefactor of everyone. That's Krishna. So remember that. If you remember that, you'll always be happy. He's full of inconceivable opulence, power, fame, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation. These are the opulences of Krishna. He has power, strong strength, fame, beauty, unlimited beauty, knowledge, renunciation, and also, yeah, we said knowledge, okay. So, one should there, renunciation in the sense that Krishna has the whole material world, and he ain't interested in enjoying it. To him, it's like the garbage heap, or the prison house. Just like the government, or the head of the government, doesn't go to the prison house to enjoy. He goes to the prison house out of compassion. So Krishna sometimes comes to the prison house of this material world out of compassion. So one should be, therefore, intelligent enough to know that except for the Lord, no one is the proprietor of anything. I should read that again. One should therefore be intelligent enough to know that except for the Lord, no one is a proprietor of anything. Being zero, zilch. One should accept only those things which are set aside by the Lord as his quota. In other words, what the Lord has given you through some endeavor. But you still don't own it. You're borrowing it. Excuse me. Even your intelligence, you're borrowing it. Your body, you're borrowing it. That's right. You're borrowing it, renting it. The cow, for instance, gives milk, but she does not drink that milk. She eats grass and straw. Of course, the calf drinks the milk. And her milk is designated as food for human beings because she gives more milk than the calf can eat. And also keeps giving milk even after the calf should not be drinking milk anymore. Such is the arrangement of the Lord. Thus we should be satisfied with those things he has kindly set aside for us. And we should always consider to whom those things we possess actually belong. In other words, we have no right to kill a living entity in order to eat, because that's not our quota. How do we know what our quota is? That's mentioned in Bhagavad Gita and other literatures. Our quota as far as food is concerned is patram pushpam palam tayam yomi vakta priyachati, only for food, little water, you know, things like that. Not mangsa, not meat. How do we know? Even the word for meat in Sanskrit is mangsa, means you will eat me. So if someone says, bring me some meat in Sanskrit, they'll say, bring some, you will eat me. And that's pretty discouraging. Just like if someone wanted to take some chicken, for example, murgi, as they say in Hindi, then you would say, please bring some chicken that I will become and I will be eaten in the future. That's pretty discouraging for someone who wants to eat chicken. So that's the Vedic injunction. If you do want to eat meat, especially the goat offered to the goddess Kali once a month on the full moon day. It's full moon today. Wow. So, time to offer something to the goddess Kali. Take, for example, our dwelling, which is made of earth, wood, stone, iron, cement, and so many other material things. If we think in terms of Shriya Upanishad, we must know that we cannot produce any of these building materials ourselves. We can simply bring them together and transform them into different shapes by our labor. A laborer cannot claim to be a proprietor of a thing just because he has worked hard to manufacture it, especially if you're working for a company. You don't own the company, or the products of the company, or the raw products that go into the product of the company. In modern society, there's always a great quarrel between the laborers and the capitalists. This quarrel has taken an international shape and the world is in danger. Prabhupada, of course, is talking about the communists against the democratic societies. So the world is in danger. Now, nowadays, not so much communism, it's just like raw avarice and greed and insanity. Actually, what's the world's problems now is that the leaders, many of the leaders in the world are very autocratic. And because they're autocratic, they become demoniac, as Prabhupada would often say. If you go to Lanka, you will become Ravan. What does that mean? That if you have a position where you have absolute authority over other living entities, then the tendency to develop demoniac consciousness is there. Because you think you can get away with anything. Of course, you don't have absolute authority over the laws of nature. But there is that concept, and we see this in many of the world's leaders today. And, you know, even anyway, I'm not going to mention any countries because I don't want to offend anybody, but many of the world's leaders today, they think that the country belongs to them. The country is made for their pleasure. And even in some countries, you have dynasties that are in charge of a country. I guess I can mention that, you know, North Korea, for example. There's the same families, and you think, this country is mine, and anybody who gets in the way, I kill. And so this is demoniac. So this is really what's causing the problems in the world today. Today it's not so much the quarrel between the laborers and the capitalists. It's between the the different autocrats. This and people who just want to enjoy the Lord's property and don't understand that Krishna owns everything. We understand that Krishna owns everything. Then one can be a king, one can be a prime minister, one can be a president, and there's no danger. But most people are not on that spiritual platform. This quarrel has taken an international shape, and the world is in danger. Men face one another in enmity and snarl just like cats and dogs. Don't we see that? Wow. Sri Upanishad cannot give advice to the cats and dogs, but it can deliver the message of Godhead to man through the bona fide Acharya's holy teachers. The human race should take the Vedic wisdom of Sri Upanishad and not quarrel over material possessions, or countries, or land. One must be satisfied with whatever privileges are given to him by the mercy of the Lord. There can be no peace if the communists or capitalists or any other party claims proprietorship. That's the real problem. People are claiming proprietorship over the resources of nature, which are entirely the property of the Lord. The capitalists cannot curb the communists simply by political maneuvering, nor can the communists defeat the capitalists simply by fighting for stolen bread. If they do not recognize the proprietorship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all the property they claim to be their own is stolen. Like Prabhupada several times gave the example, sometimes there's a bunch of thieves and they steal a lot of money or gold or something like that, and then they meet together to divide it up and they say, let's divide this honestly between ourselves. So they're dishonest, and they're thinking the thieves want to be honest amongst themselves, so they're contradictory themselves. Consequently, they will be liable to punishment by the laws of nature. Nuclear bombs are in the hands of both the communists and capitalists, and if both do not recognize the proprietorship of the Supreme Lord, it is certain, oh my God, that these bombs will ultimately ruin both parties. Thus, in order to save themselves and bring peace to the world, both parties must follow the instructions of Sri Upanishad. Unless you understand Krishna owns everything, then you're going to be fighting either on a level, personal level, interpersonal level, or a state-by-state level, if you happen to be in the United States, or political party level, or country-to-country level, or planet-to-planet, interplanetary fights, or demons and devotees. Anyway, human beings are not meant to quarrel like cats and dogs. They must be intelligent enough to realize the importance and aim of human life. Mm-hmm. The Vedic literature is meant for humanity, not for cats and dogs. Cats and dogs can kill other animals for food without incurring sin. But if a man kills an animal for the satisfaction of his uncontrolled taste buds, he is responsible for breaking the laws of nature. Consequently, he must be punished. The standard of life for human beings cannot be applied to animals. The tiger does not eat rice and wheat or drink cow's milk because he has been given food in the shape of animal flesh. So it's allowed for a tiger. Among the many animals and birds, and if you see our physical constitution, you'll see the human being is, we're talking about the stomach acids, the length of the intestines, etc. You see that the human being is not meant to eat meat. Among the many animals and birds, some are vegetarians and others are carnivorous, that means eating meat. But none of them transgress the laws of nature which have been ordained by the will of the Lord. And in other words, only human beings human beings are the only species that transgress the laws of nature. That's interesting. So we have that free will to transgress the laws of nature. Animals, birds, reptiles, and other lower form life forms strictly adhere to the laws of nature. Therefore, there's no question of sin for them, nor are the Vedic instructions meant for them. Human life alone is a life of responsibility. It is wrong, however, to think that simply by becoming a vegetarian, one can avoid transgressing the laws of nature. Vegetables also have life. That's an argument people make against vegetarianism. And while it is nature's law that one living being is meant to feed another, for human beings the point is to recognize the Supreme Lord. Thus, one should not be proud of being a strict vegetarian. Animals do not have developed consciousness by which to recognize the Lord, but a human being is sufficiently intelligent to take lessons from the Vedic literature and thereby know how the laws of nature are working to derive profit out of such knowledge. If a man neglects the instructions of the Vedic literature, his life becomes risky. A human being is therefore required to recognize the authority of the Supreme Lord and become his devotee. He must offer everything for the Lord's service and partake only of the remnants of food offered to the Lord. This will enable him to discharge his duty properly. In the Bhagavad Gita 9.26, the Lord directly states that he accepts vegetarian food from the hands of a pure devotee. Therefore, a human being should not only become a strict vegetarian, but should also become a devotee of the Lord, offer the Lord all of his food, and then partake of such prasadam, or the mercy of God. Only those who act in this way can properly discharge the duties of human life. Those who do not offer their food to the Lord eat nothing but sin and subject themselves to various types of distress, which are the results of sin. So, that's all we have time for today. As I mentioned, I do have a program, a preaching program to go to. And if anyone has a quick question, you know, has to take less than a minute, they can ask it right now. Or we'll see everybody tomorrow. If a non-devotee, here's just a quick question, this is the only one I'm going to answer today. If a non-devotee is cheating a devotee, how should the devotee react? Devotees know that he can only accept the quota given by the God, by the Lord. Does this also include the cheating of a non-devotee? No. We understand the non-devotee is trying to take, or a person who has not yet to come to Krishna consciousness, is trying to take more than his quota. So you should not let him take more than his quota. He's trying to take your quota away. So we don't allow ourselves to get cheated. Unless it's dangerous, unless he's threatening with a knife or something like that. But no, we have to protect what has been given to us by the Lord as our quota. Okay, so we'll see everybody tomorrow evening. Sorry for the short class. We have to run to this program. All glories to His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.